Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, and always a pleasure to be with you and that we get together and we have this time. And, you know, it's just good. We can all be nice to each other and kind of figure out what's going on in the world. And it's really hard and it's all very heavy, and hopefully you're doing well. That's all we really care about. You're doing well. let's start with introducing everybody. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org is what you need to get in if you want to write a letter to us. We'd love to hear from you. Quick programming note, the governor is expected to be speaking from Buffalo this morning, and we'll be taking that at 10:45 this morning. So we'll be taking the panel right up to when the governor speaks, and we'll be doing that this morning and expecting him shortly after 10:45 this morning. Okay, let's welcome the crew. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm good. We had quite a conversation, our senior group, this morning, which was terrific. We get together every morning and we share.
We noodle. You know,
we noodle and we think about things and we do it. And I took my walk starting at 5:30 this morning, and it was quite something. It's getting lighter earlier and able to get that in, too. It's wonderful.
I thought you, if I heard you correctly this morning, you walked from 5:30 to 7 or 5:30 to 7:30? That's a two-hour walk.
5:30 to 7. I do 4 miles.
All right.
You know, it's necessary. And once you get into it, you can't do without it. It's like eating. You can't stop eating.
So did you just walk to Pittsfield or what?
No.
Just around the periphery of.
No, you walk up past the beautiful Lake Mansfield. You make a left and you walk past the nursing home and, you know, another half a mile, and that's 2 miles. And then you turn around, you come back. That's 4 miles.
Good stuff. Excellent. Yep. Well, and a nice day to be out. So that's true, too. We are always happy when Mike Spain, when I see a line that is blinking and it says Michael Spain, I know it's going to be a good day. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Very nice to have you with us, as always.
Thank you.
And J.P. Miller is with us. Good morning, J.P. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. And Rosemary Armeo, you're home. How are you?
I'm good. I'm here.
Excellent. Yeah, that's sort of all we can ask for now. Be here, be alive. That's good. we're ready to talk. That's all good. All right. You know, I went to the grocery store last night to pick up a prescription for my father-in-law, and I went in and I saw somebody that I know, and I said, "Oh, how are you?" And they just gave me this, like, just completely defeated look, like, "Oh, you know." And I just, yes, I sort of, we all feel that way, right? Just like, "Oh, you know." And so I look forward to this time where we all get together and we can talk and be together, and that's very nice. So let's do it. Let's start. And we begin with what's going on in the world, and we do that through some interesting stories this morning. The president has announced that he is going to temporarily suspend immigration to this country. The rationale behind this is you don't want those immigrants coming in and taking American jobs once the economy is beginning to recover. So a formal order that will temporarily bar the issuance of new green cards and work visas could come within days, according to people around the president. And so that is one thing. Meanwhile, we still have the issue of reopening this great country of ours. We heard yesterday from the governors of Georgia, South Carolina, and Texas. Tennessee. Georgia, South Carolina, and Tennessee. They are ready to start relaxing restrictions intended to curb the spread of the virus. Plans to reopen were also moving forward in the state of Ohio, where a state prison has become the country's largest known source of coronavirus infections. Meanwhile, at least 26,000 more people have died over the past month than have officially been reported. A review of mortality data in 11 countries shows the totals include deaths directly caused by COVID, as well as those stemming from other illnesses that couldn't be treated by overwhelmed healthcare systems. Finally, well, two things. One, a dispute between the Democrats and the White House over virus testing has stalled a nearly $500 billion bipartisan agreement to replenish a loan program for small businesses and provide more financing for hospitals. We will get into that in a few moments. And finally, the benchmark price for crude oil in the U.S. fell below zero on Monday for the first time. I don't even know what's less than zero. I don't understand that concept, but it's less than zero. On my Subaru that I got, it's called a partial zero emission vehicle. I don't know what that is either, but it seems like this, like partial zero. And it's an example of the pandemic's deflationary effect on the economy. So we will talk about that as well. But let us begin, if we can, with this idea of reopening and what the states want to do. South Carolina is going to allow retail shops to open and get things moving. Georgia went even farther and said that people can go to the gym and they can get haircuts and pedicures and massages and tattoos. You know, all of the things that require people to touch each other. You can do that starting Friday in Georgia. And then next Monday, they can dine in restaurants and go to the movies. Tennessee's stay-at-home order will expire April 30th, allowing most businesses there to reopen on May 1st, according to Governor Bill Lee. Alan, what do you make of these southern states and their actions to reopen the economy?
By the way, Joe, I think you maybe have been right about Texas, because I did see a story about Texas doing some reopening also. Look, Andrew Cuomo is saying, okay, we know that in upstate New York, the hospitals have not been doing elective surgery because we told them they couldn't. We're going to have to change that now. So I think on a case-by-case basis, there's going to be some of this happening. However, the president's position is we should reopen much faster than we are able to. And that, to me, is just plain stupid, because we're talking about human lives here. And sure, there'll be people who want to protest the fact that they can't go out. But you know what? Would they protest from the grave, from 6 feet under? To me, this is crazy stuff. And as far as I'm concerned, they are making a very big, these guys are making a very big mistake. And as for Trump himself, hey, we know what this is all about. This is all about reelection. If the economy is on the floor, he has no chance whatsoever. He thinks he has a chance if he can open things up, even if he's going to kill people.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, if that happens and there is a surge and a spike in these places, doesn't that, I mean, it seems like it's a really big gamble.
Well, Joe, you know what happened? They just took a poll. 33% of the American people, that's all, 33% believe that what Trump is telling them is the truth. 33%. And that is incredible. That's down from the usual mid-40s who support Trump no matter what.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I think, Alan, you're referring to this distrust in government that, at least in one way, the distrust in government that's kind of prevailed over recent years. But Trump's own base has believed him. And now that they're not believing him, who are they believing? They're believing people like the crazies on the Internet who are against vaccinations in general and people who are against government having any role in your health care. I mean, it's pulling together not everybody who wants to go back. I mean, some people are just not educated and they're confused and they're tired of being home, but they're being lured in by these fringe movements that are capitalizing on people's fear and also on their anxious, being anxious to get back to whatever normal it will be after this thing passes. And you know, not knowing who to believe and not trusting is really the big problem here. And in some countries like Germany or Singapore, where they do trust their governments, according to surveys done there, a whole lot more than people here trust our government, they were able to manage it much better, and they are able to manage it much better, and it'd be interesting to watch how they roll things out.
So my question is too about the I know I'm going to sound prudish in this about, you know, that we do what we're supposed to do. So sorry about that. But when the president announced the plan last week to reopen, he was talking about initially for these states, when they see their numbers, and Mike, you can help me with this, but I think it was over 14 days, right? You went, once you saw the decline, 14 days after that, you could start to open up. And the question that seems to be emerging in these states that we mentioned of South Carolina and Georgia and Tennessee, as they reopen, that they haven't done that. They're getting ready to open by Friday. And so we're not even, they're not even following the advice that was set up by the commission and the president's task force. I guess that shouldn't come as a big surprise, but I know other states obviously are looking at that closely. So if that's not going to be enforced, I know the president has kicked it down the road to the governors, then what's the sense of having it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the 14-day thing, 14 days where and after what? You know, 14 days after it peaks in New York, is that what they're going on? Or 14 days after it peaks in their own community? And there's a lot of, I mean, right now, Los Angeles is seeing an uptick in the amount of cases and deaths. You have Massachusetts, Boston area, but all of Massachusetts is seeing an increase. New Jersey's kind of going through it. And there's been reports in the capital region that at least one expert computer demographer at Rensselaer Polytechnic is predicting that the peak in the capital region might not come until later in May.
Right.
You know, so we're all these different projections. Just pick the one you like and go by that, I guess, is what they're doing.
On the other hand, let me just say that Dr. Fauci, my hero, my personal hero, has now made it clear that he doesn't agree with us, that he thinks we have to be very careful about opening things up until we really know what we're doing. Good for him. And that's in contradistinction, my favorite word, to the president of the United States, who is, you know, concerned more about election than he is anything else.
Rosemary.
I think now I like a massage better than most people, but I can't see risking my life to do it. And it makes me wonder what the citizens of South Carolina and Tennessee are thinking, and Georgia are thinking,
right,
that they would, if they go along with this. In fact, the whole thing is curious to me about the dynamics of what's happening right now. We have protests, and I've said before that they're getting outsized attention from the media because they do represent a very small minority. But why are they not blaming Trump? They're all out there with MAGA hats and Confederate flags, which I also associate with him. Why are they not saying, oh, your policies are stupid and we hate you for them? Because the only thing that Michigan, Minnesota, and other Democratic governors have put into place are policies advocated by the Trump White House. So I think it's all part of a political movement. I think the PACs supporting Trump are behind this as a way to have unofficial rallies for Trump, because they make no sense when you try to think about it in terms of just the coronavirus.
But as I noted,
nothing is happening except what Trump has called for, yet he's not being attached to responsibility for policies supposedly they don't like. And then the further demonstration of how Trump is now just really just so, it's so heartless to use the epidemic as a way to push his policies, is this stop to all immigration, which, of course, he's long wanted to do, and now he thinks he has the excuse to. I hope that will be threatened and fought in court before he can actually put it in place, or we're not going to have any vegetables or fruit this week, this year either.
I think that you're going to continue to see states putting into place different policies in different times. And I think it's because the governors of these states are coming under increasing pressure to open up different parts of the economy. You know, Governor Cuomo, during his press conference yesterday, was foreshadowing this even in New York. He was talking about cabin fever in New York. He's talking about potentially opening some parts of upstate before downstate. And although, you know, we live in New York, and I think we sometimes forget that New York is now the global epicenter of the coronavirus crisis. We are the global epicenter of this pandemic. And just on Saturday night, Cuomo opened up golf courses in New York. He opened up marinas to recreational vehicles. So I think that even you know, Governor Cuomo here in New York is going to be opening up different things slowly, and you're going to see different things in different states.
I'm terribly impressed with one thing that Trump said a long time ago. You remember, maybe I've got this quote wrong. I love the undereducated.
Yeah, that goes back to the campaign, right?
Yeah, I love the undereducated. Really? And why is that, Mr. President? Why is that? Because they'll buy this BS from you?
The exact quote was in Nevada in February 24th, 2016. I love the poorly educated.
The poorly educated.
Right. The polls had found that people who were less educated supported Trump at a greater percentage. And then after that poll came out, he made that comment. Yeah.
Yeah.
You
okay.
know, if you ever thought about.
Just think about that for a second. Right. Go ahead, Mike.
No. Have you thought? I know this is a pretty grim way to look at it, but these various methods that you referred to, Rosemary, that the governors and or JP, I mean, that the governors are trying to reopen things. Some are reopening beaches. Some are reopening hairdressers and different places. Like as much as restaurants might reopen, the bars aren't reopening in Georgia yet, I guess. But, you know, as that kind of rolls out, we'll find out pretty quickly how, well, we won't. Right. We'll find out in 14 days how bad a decision that was.
Right.
And we'll, you know, other places that have been more reserved be better off for it. And that's a terrible, terrible way. But these places that are reopening gradually are becoming the human guinea pigs for others. And it's just frightening when you think about it.
We're going to pause there. We have to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. Programming note that Governor Cuomo will be speaking from Buffalo and giving his daily briefing on the coronavirus response from New York State. That coming up at 10:45 this morning. We'll be talking till then. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, JP Miller, and Rosemary Armeo. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Let's go to some letters and then we'll move on to other topics. We got this one from Mick, who says Trump's puppet governors in red base states appear to be scheduled to open first. This will give Trump an opportunity to return to holding mass rallies with his base, something he dearly misses. When the rally concludes, Trump, the state's governor, and rally roadies will toss out rolls of toilet paper to the crowd from the huge federal stockpiles as a token of appreciation for showing the rest of the country, see, it's okay to gather once again, and Puerto Rico will remember. A lot there.
Yeah, he packs a lot in, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's good. Russ says, now that Cuomo is on his way to Washington for the imposition of his penance, we really need to be thinking about how to survive as a state without federal support. The law of limited means will require careful of resources if we are to administer tests and tracking to move from epidemic prevention to epidemic control. Anyone on that?
Well, we can't do it without federal aid. I mean, we already know that we send more money to Washington than we get back here in New York. And if we have to, I mean, if we could just keep the money, I suppose, then we could become an independent country and that would just throw everything, you know, up in the air. But we have to get federal aid.
Yeah, but Mike, there's no money for that kind of thing. We have to spend it on our war machine so that we can have, you know, one plane that would feed 1,000 people or many more than 1,000 people. It's sarcastic, of course.
Even the Republicans, I mean, although it's temporary, the Republicans have just voted overwhelmingly to support, bolstering people on every level, you know, like a guaranteed income for at least one time only, and they're taking care of letting people get sick pay who wouldn't ordinarily get it. I mean, a lot of the things that we say we can't afford, we suddenly can afford it because we see it as necessary. So it's all about priorities, and maybe this will reshape our priorities when we look back at it. I mean, that might be one potential benefit from having this terrible crisis. As Churchill said, don't let a good crisis go to waste, right? Was it Churchill, Alan?
I don't know, but it sounds. It was either Churchill. It was either Churchill or Yogi Berra.
I see it as instead of priorities, I think it's more leverage. You know, Trump has leverage on Governor Cuomo right now, and Cuomo is obviously the number one media celebrity and government celebrity right now. And for him to hold that federal aid over his head to say, you better say nice things about me every day at your press conferences. You better say nice things to me, you know, every day at your press conferences. For Trump to give up that leverage early, I don't see it. I think that he's going to hold it out there and try and get Cuomo to do as many things positive for his reelection as he can.
Absolutely. And JP, I was talking to your cousin PJ, who really so there's no PJ, who basically was wondering who called who down to the White House. Was it Cuomo who said, can I come? Or was it an irate president who was looking at Cuomo's numbers who said, you know, you get down here, I want to talk to you. And if you open your mouth again, you know, I'm not going to use my resources, meaning the resources of the federal government, our tax dollars, to help New York, which we know he's capable of doing. So it's an interesting question.
I agree. There are a lot of questions about today. One, you know, Cuomo's been down to the White House before, too, to meet with President Trump, but they've never had an official photograph release. There's never been photographers. Are there going to be photographs of them together in the White House? Are they going to invite the press in for a short availability to answer questions? And, you know, what is going to come out with this? Is Cuomo going to come back with something that Trump has promised in either federal aid or testing promises? Mm. So this afternoon, I think that the meeting's set for 3 p.m. I'm really excited to see how the meeting goes and what the, you know, what happens there.
Yeah.
How much is at stake, do you think, for when we, as Mike was saying, obviously we need the federal help. So does everybody end up being happy, at least momentarily, and then there's sniping at the end of the week?
Well, we do know that Trump has used past statements from Andrew to buttress his own image when Cuomo thinks he may have gone a little too far, as he did about a week ago, and says something nice about him. They take that down and they start to pass that around, which is typical.
Go ahead, Mike.
No. I was going to say, Alan, you're right. That will become a soundbite in one of the Trump TV ads. It'll say he's had support from bipartisan governors, even New York's Cuomo, you know, and then they'll have that quote. You know, that's the way it works.
And Mike's doing the voiceover. That's good.
Right.
Beth writes to us and says, I'm not being hyperbolic when I say that poor people are going to have to make a life and death decision about going back to work in Ohio or these other reopening southern states. They'll be weighing losing their unemployment check because their governor said they should go back to work versus protecting themselves and their families. Rosemary, what do you make of that?
No, it's exactly right. It's like a Sophie's choice. It's interesting in New York, there's stories coming out that people are opting to stay home, at least for now, rather than take another job because you can get more in the current unemployment benefits than you can going back to work. So why risk your life? Why not stay home if you can make as much or more money doing that? And of course, I laugh at that because that was one of the reasons that Republicans were holding up the first relief bill, was that their fear that you know, lazy poor people would take advantage of the epidemic.
Well,
so
you know,
I'm glad that they're doing it. I think that's, if in the same position, I mean, I think I would do the same. And people are wise to be right now skeptical of their government and not see what it's doing as in their best interest. So the distrust that Trump has been sowing is going to come back, and I hope hit him, but certainly it's going to hit future governors of this country.
Alan?
Well, I haven't been very pleased with the way NPR has been covering all of this. They, you know, it's as if I've said so many times, they're walking around with two buckets on their shoulders, trying to balance. And I think sometimes it comes out more in favor of Trump than it really ought to. But they did do a story this morning about this, and New York has also had a story that Rosemary is referring to, which comes out that people are staying home. This is the standard argument. This is the standard argument that Republicans and people on the right have always used against socialism. People won't work. And that is what they're putting out there all over the place. I don't know how that works out, Rosemary. You say you might do the same thing, but in the end, does that defeat what the government is doing?
It should be defeating what the government is doing. The government has not shown that it is interested in protecting people. So if you then say, okay, I have to act for myself, I have to protect my own self and my family, what would you do? Would you go to work, even though I do think people want to work? I think that's a basic drive. I've never believed in all the stuff on welfare that it just made people lazy. That's just not the way humans are built. But in this case, where going to work means you're risking your life and all future earnings, mm-hmm. or you stay home for right now while there's funding for unemployment, what would you do?
Well, you know, NPR had this story this morning about this. I think Kentucky Joe, you're the keeper of all the good stuff.
of all the good stuff, that's me. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, and what they were saying was that this lady who runs a coffee shop, I think in Kentucky, but I don't want to swear to it. Was basically put out of work because she couldn't keep the baristas coming in because they were making so much more money by staying at home. So,
yeah,
but I agree with Rosemary. I mean, if you have a choice, you can cover some of your family's bills because of government aid that you are entitled to is coming your way, or you can go out and risk your life and bring home less money. Why would you risk your life? I mean, it's kind of helping you stay in quarantine and do what they want you to do, stay at home. It's not an irrational decision.
I think 100% of Americans, if they were offered more money to stay home or less money to go work really hard and put yourself at risk, they would take more money and stay home. That's simple logic.
So here's a letter from Jane who said, I moved to Tennessee from Vermont, almost wishing I hadn't. I have no intention of going to a movie, a restaurant, a gym until there is reliable antibody testing or a vaccine.
Right.
You can't get masks. You can't get Lysol. You can't get anything here. And testing is only available if you're willing to wait for hours and have an appointment. My neighbors who are ready to run around as though this is all over scares me.
Yep.
That's why Trump said I like the undereducated.
It's an interesting point though, and we'll take it too, because Alan, you're right. Yes, so there are going to be people who are going to run around. I get that, but also if we start just opening stuff up, are people actually going to do it? I mean, are they really going to as Rosemary said? I mean, are they going to risk their lives and say, oh, all right, I'm not going to wear a mask and I'm going to go to the grocery store and then do what else? Or are they really going to be very cautious?
Joe, we know the answer to that already. We know it from when Florida opens up a beach or South Carolina and they're standing body to body there. We know it. So people will be stupid. There's no way out of that. They will do it. And I don't know. I mean, that's where
I heard a, who was that? Was that Mike?
No, that was me. I think there's some question about, you know, a beach, you know, if the air is flowing and the wind is blowing and you keep far apart, you might feel you're safer there.
Yeah, but they're not keeping far apart.
But I mean, you might have that intention when you go, and there might be some who adhere to that, whatever. But I mean, going into a movie theater or going into a bar that's crowded, what it reminds me of is I was curious and remain curious about when the FAA finally says, go ahead and put the 737 MAX airplanes back up in the air. It's safe to fly in them again. How many people do you think are going to flock to to those. Some will, yes. but it's going to be gradual. They're going to wait and see, don't you think?
Yeah, Mike is always brilliant. Mike is always brilliant, and the point is, it's not all. It's not all or none. It's some.
Yeah.
It's some.
Yeah.
It's also going to be a tough call, I think, for New York State. You know, this summer, are those beaches on Long Island going to be open? You know, Long Beach, Jones Beach, the Rockaways, those are very popular beaches, very crowded beaches. Or are they going to be closed in New York? And, you know, of course, if you have a beach house in the Hamptons, you can go to the beach. But are they going to be open to the public this summer? That's going to be a tough call for Governor Cuomo, because I do think people, a certain number of people are going to want to go out to the beach this summer. It's going to get hot in July and August.
And Rosemary, I am sure you saw in the New York Times, no lesser place, a story about Fire Island.
I knew you were going to bring it up. Yes.
Fire Island. They don't want anybody to come. Period. End of story. Stay away. Don't come
Stay
here.
Home. Right.
Yeah.
You know, as the restrictions were coming crashing down, I was in beaches in North Carolina and Virginia. And the thing is, you go because you think, oh, I can social distance there easily. And indeed, we did. There were several days with the weather is a little bit off. Or it's especially scary, death tolls. There were so few people there, you could go to the beach and it was a wonderful outing and you were social distancing. But so I think people will go to the beaches and see what it's like. If they're like the Florida beaches, the ones we're seeing pictures of, would you go there? You might as well go to the farmer's market or a theater. People are right on top of each other and it seems very dangerous and not worth risking your life for a nice swim.
We have, we're just going to take one more letter here because I like it. It's from Zuja, who said, you know, Governor Cuomo needs to wear a wire when he meets with 45 today. I like that.
He ain't going to do that. We probably will never know the full of it.
But I'd love to hear, be a fly on the wall for that one. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Back to the letters we go. Eric says, without a vaccine, opening the economy will require some measures of social distancing and protection, but they will not be enough to stop the spread of the virus. Sooner or later, keeping the economy open will require a trade-off that will cost lives. Under this scenario, who gets to determine the degree of this trade-off, and can anyone imagine what this would look like? Unknown territory, says Eric. Mm-hmm. We get this from Bill, who says, let's remember the Isaac Asimov quote, when stupidity is considered patriotism, it is unsafe to be intelligent. That's a good one. Mary says, one of the prisons in Ohio holds the state's highest concentration of COVID infections. We did mention that this morning. As the state opens up, are they going to release people into the community with a high risk of having been infected, or are they going to extend prison terms of people who have served their time and are due to be released this week, this month, this year? I think, from my understanding of this particular case, I don't think they've thought it through. Anybody else?
Well, this could go either way, Joe.
Yeah. Well, it just doesn't seem like they're very interested in reopening the economy.
Well, some people are letting prisoners out.
Right.
Some people are keeping them in. Obviously, these are breeding grounds for the disease. No question about it. It is interesting that some of the Trump figures have petitioned to get out of prison. Remember, a lot of the Trump friends went to prison, Cohen and the others, and are saying you have to let us out because of the virus. And I have a feeling they're going to get out.
Yeah, he's rumored to be considering that right now. But it's surprising he's been considering it in the past, and he has repeatedly used the epidemic as an excuse to put in horrible policies that politically were unacceptable previously.
Mm-hmm.
Rose says, what I think we're kind of dancing around here, are these premature reopenings a way of saying, oh, well, we'll have to sacrifice some people to get our economy back on track?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that seems.
Absolutely. That's
and the governor, or the lieutenant governor of Texas said exactly that, right? That it's a trade-off.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Cindy says the protesters and the people that aren't wearing masks, not distancing, will disappear with the coronavirus and Trump will have no supporters.
Well, yeah, that's
grim,
really
but I don't
what's
think
going to happen. No, I'm saying, unfortunately, well, I don't mean unfortunately, but that's not only what's going to happen, is because they're going to turn around and go infect other people and a lot of innocent people. I think the Governor Whitmore was saying yesterday that, you know, this isn't about saving you or affecting you. It's about saving our grandparents and our elderly and the weak among us. And that, those are the people that are going to, even if they don't, go out to bars or restaurants or hair salons, are going to eventually, you know, catch the virus because others around them will have it then. And that's the scary thing.
Does anybody else think, is anybody else thinking about this, that, you know, in some of these states which are, quote, opening up with Republican governors, and you say, what is it? You mean to say, even though so many good Republicans are saying, no, this is stupid, don't open up yet, governors of, you know, different states, there are so many of these guys who say, okay, the president says to do it, I'm saluting and I'm going to do it. Isn't that terrible?
That guy in Georgia, holy cow.
Yes, exactly.
It's like Darwinian.
Governor Kemp,
Woo.
Well, and every one of his mayors of the big cities are saying, what are you, crazy?
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is that when he's talking about rolling back, he didn't really close anything until 2 weeks ago. I mean,
right.
This hasn't really been in effect for very long.
Expressing surprise that you could get infected from people who didn't show symptoms. And really, talk about you're poorly educated.
So this is a true story from me over the weekend, and I just want to throw it out because it's one of those, like, what do you do in a real-life scenario? But we're at the grocery store. It's going fine. Everybody's wearing a mask. Everything's fine. And then there's four people who are together, and they don't have a mask on. They also happen to have Make America Great Again hats on. Now, the store manager, okay. So the manager walks up and says, I'm sorry, you have to have a mask on. And then they start arguing and saying, you know, this is all a hoax and blah, blah, blah. And the manager says, okay, well, we are asking you to please put a mask on. We have them up front. We'll give you a mask, but you have to put them on if you want to stay in the store. And they start screaming and yelling. And then I don't know. I would say it didn't get violent or anything, but it was raised voices. And the manager said, look, I'm sorry, but we'll have to ask you to leave. And they said, well, what are you going to do, arrest us? And the guy said, no, I'm not going to arrest you. I can't do anything. I'm just asking you to do it. My point of this question is that even the governor said this, that New York has a way. There's nothing behind it, really, right? I mean, even here in New York, he said, we'll be New York tough and people will make you wear the mask. But you really can't do that. And I'm just wondering how you enforce this stuff.
I think Governor Cuomo addressed that. He said that the other day during one of his daily briefings. He said, you're in New York. We're not going to arrest you. But people are going to come up to you and say, hey, where's your mask? Put the mask on.
Well, that's right, but it doesn't make them put the mask on. And also,
as in your case, Joe, they didn't.
Right. Well, they didn't. You know, and they're still walking around. Right. And yeah. So what do you do? I know we're in a different part of the world. We're talking about southern states versus what's happening in New York. But to me, it's interesting because I don't know what you do. If you see somebody walk into a store, they don't have a mask on. What is a clerk going to do? What is a store manager going to do? What are the other customers who are wearing masks and face coverings going
to
do?
I think it's similar to when smoking laws began to go into effect and you couldn't smoke in places where previously you could. And people then did stand up and they would talk back to people who disobeyed, and the public peer pressure was enormous. And you don't see that as much anymore. No one comes into an elevator with a lit cigarette. No one stands in a fast food line because people talk and he's right. It may not happen right away, and it may not happen with everybody. There may be thugs like the ones you're describing. Yeah. I have a friend who lives in New York City, and she talked yesterday about being accosted by a panhandler who wanted money, and she demurred and tried to walk away. And he feigns coming after her to hold her in a big bear hug rather than just harass her for more. And she said she found herself very frightened by that. So, this is going to be an issue for the citizenry to stand up for their rights and for police to enforce against people who go over the line.
You're exactly right. However, in the Joe story, which is so interesting, these people were looking for trouble. That's obvious. They were looking for trouble. They didn't want to hear, you know, somebody admonishing them. They wanted to hear somebody admonishing. They were looking for that. That's what's so awful.
Yeah, it seems that way. I agree with you, Alan. I mean, I don't want to assign a motive to it, but you can't help but to think that. And the other thing about it, too, is that it just... I mean, I know if I were in the situation, like you walk in, you're like, oh, I forgot my mask. And somebody says, oh, could you put a mask on? Like, yeah, you put a mask on. Like, it's the same time if you go to the doctor's office and before all of this, you go to the doctor's office and they say, oh, do you have the sniffles? Can you put a mask on so you don't, you know, get everybody? Like, that makes sense to me. But not everybody's going to be nice.
You know, there are lots of good people. Roselle and I were told off the other day because we were walking down the aisle in the supermarket, which turned out to be a one-way aisle. We didn't know from one-way aisles. This is the first time we had been there. But okay, we thanked the guy because he was exactly right.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you just you don't know. No, I've been yelled at a lot in the grocery store lately because I don't stay in the box sometimes, or you don't know where the line is. You have to be 6 feet back, the line, and right. And they're not yelling, but they're keeping you in line. Ronnie says stores are private property and can tell people to wear it or leave their store. If they refuse to leave the store, have the police remove them for not leaving the property when asked.
Easier said than done.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree. And you know, and even in the store we were in, they had a security guard there, too. It's, you know,
really?
It's interesting. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. The governor will be holding a briefing in Buffalo on the COVID-19 response. That will be happening at approximately 10:45. We will bring it to you live when it does happen. In the meantime, we're going to go to news, and then we'll be back with our wonderful panel, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and we'll continue after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. We'll be going to about 10:45 when Governor Cuomo begins to speak in Buffalo with his daily briefing on the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, The Empire Report's J.P. Miller, and investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo all make up the panel. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. The federal government gave national hotel and restaurant chains millions of dollars in grants before the $349 billion program ran out of money Thursday, leading to a backlash that prompted one company to give the money back and a Republican senator to say that, quote, millions of dollars are being wasted. Thousands of traditional small businesses were unable to get funding from the program before it ran dry. As Congress and the White House near a deal to add an additional $310 billion to the program, some are calling for additional oversight and rule changes to prevent bigger chains from accepting any more money. The big one that seemed to get the most, the loudest criticism is Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Rosemary did mention this yesterday, a chain that has 150 locations and is valued at $250 million, reported receiving $20 million in funding from the small business portion of the economic stimulus package called the Paycheck Protection Program, PPP. The Potbelly chain of sandwich shops, which has more than 400 locations and a value of $89 million, reported receiving $10 million last week. And the other one, of course, is Shake Shack, which received $10 million. And they're worth $1.6 billion. They finally gave the money back yesterday because there was so much criticism. So to this fundamental question, I guess, of additional oversight, rule changes, how do you keep bigger chains from accepting more money, and how did this happen in the first place? JP, what do you think?
Well, there's one you missed. Harvard University accepted $8 million in the relief package, and they have a $40 billion endowment. So they're also under fire. But, you know, the fundamental question is, do you want these companies to lay off their workers? When this PPP money that goes out, 75% of every dollar has to be spent on maintaining payroll. And the other 25% has to be spent on stuff like rent and utilities, and none is allowed to go to the owners or the shareholders. So, you know, these companies, I guess, are going to give back the money and unfortunately have to lay off the employees. And it is a question as to how big of a company are we going to give this assistance to when 100% of the assistance is supposed to be going to maintaining salaries of workers.
it's a little more complicated than that, or maybe I'm just listening to it wrong, JP. It's that, yes, the money has to go to retain workers. But what Ruth Chris did was fire off all its underlings and kept the managers. So you limit how much you're paying them. They can't get overtime. And they shut a whole bunch of franchises that were in places where business was not supporting the managerial salaries. So they got around the rule of the money has to go towards paying employees, and it did benefit the shareholders. And that's what's so obnoxious about it. Not that money goes to, maybe it should, if it were administered correctly, Ruth Chris might have gotten it, because it would keep a whole lot of workers and franchises in their jobs. Didn't happen that way. And don't forget, the first thing the president did, even before he signed his name to the legislation, was come out with a declaration saying, I'm not going to pay attention to any independent audit of this. So I think that the Democrats have a lot of pull right now in putting into place the kinds of monitoring and auditing that would really make a difference.
Yeah, and it's a good thing to point out that a lot of these companies, like the hotel chains, like Marriott, for example, and Hilton, they got a huge, huge tax break in 2017, and instead of investing it, you know, to grow, they bought back stock so they could elevate the price, the share of their stock prices, and that elevates the wealth of the major, the executives of the companies. And that was supposed to be, that was the argument back then for the tax break, that these companies will turn around and invest it in their people and hire people, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And it's the same thing. The money's out there. How do you make a company use it the way you want them to? That's tough.
Rules and oversight, right?
Joe, I wonder if you'd give me leave to read two letters. I know you've been doing that because you're there and I'm not. But this is one I think needs to be read. The photo of people crammed together on the beach in Jacksonville, sparking the liberals on MSNBC to go ballistic, showed the pier in the background. The one that was partially destroyed by Hurricane Irma. Fake news? Alan doesn't care. It fits his hate Trump narrative. But Alan, here's why I write. WAMC's always seeking donations. I listen, but your utter bias and hatred prevents me from sending you one dime. I wonder how much you've kissed goodbye, because you're only preaching to the choir and not the entire congregation. Oh, I apologize for that religious reference. That must have offended all of you. Peter. Isn't that nice? That's a lovely letter. I thought I would just read that if I could. And it is unbelievable. Okay, so then one other, Joe, if I may. Rita writes to us, how is Trump's base doing? And wants to know if there's been any change in the polls. Anybody want to handle that one? Well, I will. 30, he's down to 33% believe what he is saying. That's down from the mid-40s. Which is his base. Now, it's not the same thing, but it is his base. And if 33% are saying, only 33% are saying we believe this guy, I think that's a change in the polls, don't you?
That's significant. No, I think it's significant. But it's a long way to November. And then, you know, getting into the politics of it, how and when will Joe Biden get out a message that he can bring the country back and bring it together and leverage all our resources to do better than the current president's doing. I mean, he's got a lot of convincing to do, too. People may still stick with Trump because they don't have any real, you know, a lot of the people who supported him before may stick with him because they don't really have any other choice from their perspective. They may not believe Biden either. How do you do it?
And it even gets worse than it even. Oh, sorry, JP, I'll be right with you. It even gets worse than that, because let's just say the 33% say only 33% say we believe him. That doesn't mean they're not going to vote for him. Do you understand what I'm saying?
That's
here?
Right. Yes, I do.
I think he's skating on very thin ice here. He's relying on his old playbook in terms of margin of victory, that he's going to be a divider and keep his base and turn out his base, where
That's right.
He had an opportunity at the beginning of this and throughout this to do what Andrew Cuomo has done in New York, which is unite him. You know, you look at Andrew Cuomo's poll numbers, he has 87% of New Yorkers approve of him. That means a huge number of Republicans right now are fans of Andrew Cuomo. And Trump could have, in the beginning or throughout this, pivoted to a unification message and not dividing and not attacking the press. And I think that his strategy right now is risky for his reelection.
He has no idea how to unify. He doesn't. That's not even in his skill set. You know, there were other times when he could have done the same thing, united the country.
Right.
And you're right.
It is not in his skill set, and his way of achieving what he wants, and he did this in business, and it's been well documented, is to divide the people up around him and to have people going at each other and to weaken the opposition by creating all kinds of, you know, false images of what's really going on and then somehow capitalizing on that. And that's the way a minority keeps in control of the majority. He leverages it so well.
Well, the Nazis did it that way.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's how apartheid ruled in South Africa for so long. The minority basically dictated what was going on. And the majority, which was African blacks, were out of power. I mean, it's possible. I mean, how many, Rosemary, how many votes did Trump have versus Hillary Clinton? What was the variance?
Yeah, like 3 million
right.
More for Hillary Clinton. You know, but you look at it, why should, from his point of view, why should Trump do anything differently? What has he wanted that he hasn't gotten or is on the way to getting, including a stupid wall? He has managed with that minority of support to control the Senate, which is to control the judiciary, which is to control immigration. He has gotten everything. His tax cut. He has gotten everything he has sought.
But not the House, Rosemary. Let's remember that good piece of news that the House went blue, and that was a total rejection. And it went blue big. So that was a total rejection of this guy. And I've been saying all along, I know that you and I may not agree on this, that he's going to get kicked out of there. That people have had enough of him. That what he said in the beginning, which amused so many people, and said this is just like television. Good, you know. Let's give these Clintons and the rest of these people a kick in the behind, and we'll just feel good about that. That ain't going to happen this time. Not this time.
So on that note, Lee writes, Alan's certainty that Trump will lose the election is naive. Joe Biden is a bland candidate. The Dems. Ground game is missing. The Republicans play hardball and will steal the election with voter suppression, as they did the last time. Biden needs to choose a strong VP. Kamala Harris was unprepared when she ran for president. Michigan's governor has good hair, but what else? Elizabeth Warren is terrific, but we need her vote in the Senate. Stacey Abrams is it. She's smart, tough, and knows a thing or two about voter suppression. Google her appearance on Firing Line and watch her duel with host Margaret Hoover. She's terrific. This is who Biden and the Dems need to take on Trump.
Well, if there's one thing that's true about what she says about me is that I'm a very naive fellow. The way that I see this is people have had it with him and they want him out of there and they're going to get him out of there. You can only play this game so far.
Well, and also the I don't know if I necessarily agree with the Stacey Abrams is a very attractive vice presidential candidate. There still is the issue about the experience of what she has done that would lend herself to be president if that were to be necessary. Rosemary?
Well, there's some discussion now about the choices that she's making. She probably would be a front runner the day she said yes to running for the Senate in Georgia, which is there's an open seat, and she'd be a shoo-in for that. Why is she not going for that? I don't know even if there's time for her to change her mind if she does not get tapped for the VP spot. I do think she's exciting, but I don't think she's the only exciting candidate. I think Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris would be game changers in this election. They would not be quiet Biden.
Yesterday during an interview, Biden, when asked about Michelle Obama, said, quote, "I'd take her in a heartbeat." And he says he's going to be putting together a group of people to, you know, vet the VP candidates. And there's also an article in Politico today saying that Democrats dream of Biden's perfect running mate and Obama. So I think Michelle Obama is going to be in the mix and will be vetted and will be considered. And that obviously would be a big big plus for a Biden candidacy.
Even though that she has yelled from the highest mountaintop that she would, you know, rather die than do that.
And her lack of experience in politics does not bother you. Stacey Abrams does, but Michelle Obama does not.
Obama has a lot of experience in politics, no?
I would agree with you. What do you mean, no? She was sitting there with her husband.
She's the first lady. That's not political experience.
I think it is.
Unelected honorary position.
I think it is.
And she grew food in a garden in the White House.
And I think the American people think it is. Every poll shows her to be a great favorite of the people. And she's a very bright woman.
A bright woman. There's no question. But American polls also show Hillary Clinton was extremely popular until that moment when she became a candidate. As soon as a strong woman shows ambition in this country, the polls change. And we are crazy to think that it would not happen to Michelle Obama as well. An unpopular and inexperienced woman in that spot.
Well, we sure do disagree on all.
Look at Sarah Palin. How quickly she fizzled. People were really, you know, lauding her when she was the governor of Texas almost instantly.
You don't mean Texas, you mean Alaska.
Right. Alaska. Pardon my. Yeah.
Political experience does not win an election. Donald Trump had zero political experience and he became president. I think Michelle Obama would be tremendous for Biden.
Yep.
Aaron says, let's remember Ruth's Chris is a huge sponsor of Hannity. Hate that guy, says Aaron. Please remind the panel about the connection with Hannity. And I think you just did. We read the Isaac Asimov quote early, and Peg says another quote of his, the easiest way to solve a problem is to deny that it exists. Mark says, here's my problem with Rosemary's idea of using social pressure to make people wear masks. They might be carrying concealed firearms. There are also Second Amendment supporters! Leo says, I believe Governor Cuomo said if people didn't comply with mask directives, he could address the situation by making it a misdemeanor, but that has not occurred. Eden says, it is my understanding that you are not allowed to turn down your old job if it is offered back to you. You must certify each week that you did not turn down a job. These are the unemployment rules. In the manual, it says that you can take your money back later if you give false information. Sounds risky to be greedy. Also, on unemployment and insurance, as a human resources professional for over 10 years, I'd like to remind you of the 80-20 rule. 80% of people will use a program like unemployment insurance responsibly. 20% of people will abuse it if given the chance. The question for policymakers then becomes, do we implement this program and accept that a minority percentage will abuse it fraudulently, or do we use the examples of fraud to justify not having a program? Gene says, why do I feel that Governor Cuomo's visit to Washington today is like George Bailey's visit to Mr. Potter? Susan says, 45's base can rally and mingle and infect each other all they want. As far as I'm concerned, it's when they go back to their communities and infect other people who are not like-minded. Selfishness personified, says Susan.
I agree.
Joseph writes, I'm thinking that it must really be annoying Republicans like Graham and McConnell because some poor working folks are actually getting a good deal for once from the government vis-a-vis the high dollar unemployment checks they're now receiving rather than the usual situation where only the people who don't need help end up getting it. You can tell from their tone they don't want to have the folks in Kentucky getting used to be treated fairly, Gene says, as the mother of two always hardworking adult children, both laid off, they won't go to their jobs because of the danger of infection and bringing a terrible disease home to their child. The extra money just means they won't end up bankrupt. Deborah says, I just don't see how we can open the economy without opening schools. Otherwise, parents can't go back to work. I shudder at the thought of going back too soon. Social distancing in my kindergarten class? Hugs and kisses are rampant. And the governor addressed that yesterday and said we're a long way from that. He didn't see that coming anytime soon. Rick says, Amy Klobuchar is the best choice for VP. She's from the Midwest and can bring in that area of the country. Sue says, I hate to see family succession, and this is in regards to Michelle Obama. Didn't like Hillary running for that reason, though I did vote for her. Kenneth says to the panel, I sit in the house with Wi-Fi, two computers, three televisions, along with 100 other channels and a library with lots of books. Who am I to complain about someone who might be bored sitting at home when I don't know what their circumstances are? Maybe these people aren't stupid, just not as fortunate as I am. All right. That's the run of letters I have right in front of me at the moment. I do want to move over to a couple of other topics. We have one more break to go to, and then we'll be going to the governor at 10:45. So, too much oil, how a barrel came to be worth less than nothing. This was the big story yesterday, continues to be a big one today, of course, in regards to the Dow, which is down over 350 points as of my looking up at the screen just a moment ago. One oil price went negative on Monday, signaling that there is no place to store all the crude that the world is producing but not using. Something bizarre happened in the oil markets on Monday. Prices fell so much that some traders paid buyers to take oil off their hands. The price of the main U.S. oil benchmark fell more than $50 a barrel to end the day at about $30 below zero, the first time oil prices have ever turned negative. Such an eye-popping slide is the result of a quirk in the oil market, but it underscores the industry's disarray as the coronavirus pandemic decimates the world's economy. Demand for oil is collapsing, and despite a deal by Saudi Arabia, Russia, and other nations to cut production, the world is running out of places to put all the oil. The industry keeps pumping out about 100 million barrels a day. At the start of the year, oil sold for over $60 a barrel, but by Friday, it hit about $20. Alan.
Well, you know, I must say I'm not I am not in touch with why this oil thing is so important. We do know that it's the basis of much of our economy, and therefore it scares the hell out of people like Trump and others. People are not flying, so they don't need any oil for their planes. People are not driving, so they don't need any gas for their cars, or they need very little of it. I think there's something sort of charming about all of this happening. On the other hand, maybe there's something I'm missing here. In other words, if we can't support oil and oil doesn't become the part of our economy that it is, people will say it will collapse what we have even more. I don't know. Somebody else may know more than I do.
Yeah, there's some really interesting stuff on in the Washington Post about this whole oil thing. The danger, of course, is that if companies lose money because they have to pay for storage, then they shut down production and it doesn't come back when you do need it. So it stalls the economy now and in the future. The other interesting thing is that if we really did have a president who was a deal maker, there's an opportunity for the U.S. government here. It does have reserve capabilities. It could take a large supply of oil and hold on to it. So what Trump has done is offered it to his buds in the energy industry and said, hey, you can store your stuff here for free, which is like another subsidy for an industry that has gotten a ton of subsidies from us taxpayers. Instead, what it might do is buy cheap oil, or be paid even to take oil off the hands of suppliers who need to get rid of it, hold on to it, and then sell it and make a profit for taxpayers. Now, the Reserve has never done that in the past, but there's nothing in the law that prevents it. And if you had a president who was seeing the possibilities and really had the taxpayers' wishes and needs it at heart, this is something that could be done right now.
Yeah, but you're not going to get it from a president who picks an oil industry lobbyist to head the EPA.
Yes. Exactly.
Oh, you.
Are we talking here, Joe, about an oil company bailout?
that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask what the reaction's going to be like when all the big oil companies want a taxpayer bailout. That's going to be some debate.
Which they'll get.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, Alan, you pointed out they're essentially getting, they're getting all kinds of breaks anyway. You know, it's kind of there and has been there for decades, for the last century. And this just exposes how tilted things are towards an oil economy. And we were moving away from that anyway. Maybe this will even accelerate it.
Yeah, Kurt asked that question. If Obama was still around, you can be sure that this crisis would serve as impetus to transition away from fossil fuels once and for all. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will finish up. We'll have 15 minutes together or so before the governor begins to speak, and we'll be taking that live as soon as it happens. He is scheduled to begin speaking on the pandemic beginning at 10:45. So we'll be going to that around 10:45 this morning. In the meantime, we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Still a couple things to talk about and get to more letters in the 15 minutes that we have left. WAMC's Alan Chartok, former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, The Empire Report's J.P. Miller, and investigative journalist and New Albany adjunct professor Rosemary R. Mayo, all making up the panel. We will return after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Rosemary R. Mayo. A reminder, we're expected to go to the governor from Buffalo. New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo will be speaking in Buffalo around 10:45 this morning, and we will go right up to that as soon as he comes on to the stage. And again, we're expecting that shortly after 10:45 this morning. Try to get to as many letters as we possibly can get to as well in that time, and a few other topics. We go to David, who says, unless someone comes up with a vaccine, we are all going to get the COVID virus over the next 2 years. Social distancing and quarantine is not intended to stop the virus. It's simply to slow the spread of it. If all Americans were to get sick at the same time, medical providers would not be able to meet the need. If we all get sick but staggered over time, over the next 2 years, there will be enough hospital beds to treat the sick who need it. Medical professionals know that without a vaccine, 80 to 90% of the world will catch the virus until we achieve herd immunity. We have heard that term, herd immunity. Anyone on that?
Good letter. It happens to be true. So it's a good letter. I don't know that 90% will get it, but an awful lot of us will.
Mike?
Go ahead, Mike.
I mean, no, I was just going to say the real question that everyone is debating is, or a lot of the governors are debating, is can we find out who's already had it, who didn't know they had it, they were asymptomatic, or they might have had a cold, and to that effect, the New York Health Department has been going around trying to collect like 3,000 random samples. They've been going into supermarkets across the state and just inviting people to donate a pinprick of blood and document it, and then they're going to test it to see if the antibody is there, and then interview the people, of course, and find out if they know if they had it, if they think they had it, if they think they didn't have it. And what we might discover is a lot of us have had it, and a lot of us are immune from it, and we don't even know it. And that would give us the information we need to know about how gradually or how quickly to open up the economy.
Mike, that study is going to be so fascinating. I'm really glad you brought that up. Can you imagine if it's a low percentage and it really hasn't penetrated our population, or whether it's a high percentage or somewhere in the middle? I mean, it's going to be fascinating to get those results. I think it's the first one that's happening in the entire country, and hear about what our Commissioner of Health, Dr. Howard Zucker, says about it, what Cuomo says about it, and what Dr. Fauci says about it. It's going to be fascinating once those results come out.
And by the way, in Massachusetts, the governor has hired these so-called detectives to go around and to I think we're talking about 1,000, maybe 2,000, but I think it's 1,000 who will go around and trace contacts and let people know. It's quite a remarkable thing for him to be doing.
Does anybody know how to get one of those jobs? That's something I would like to do. I think that's even more interesting than being a census taker.
Yeah, no, I think your chances of getting such a job would be good, Rosemary.
Yeah, who else wants to do it?
I would love to do that. I do think
you could do it from the phone.
Oh, you can do it from the phone? Don't you have to take... Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's like a reporter tracking down a source and then going from one source to another. I mean, you'd be very good at it, Rosemary.
I think it would be thrilling. You'd certainly be doing a public service. I think it really makes a difference. The countries that have used contact tracing have seen a difference in their curves. I'd love to do that.
And you could document it, Rosemary.
I know. I'd totally love it.
Okay, now that we've planned...
You have to be confidential, though.
I could do that. I can do that. Investigative reporters know how to keep their mouth shut when they have to.
May I ask the panel, though, aren't we... I don't know. It just seems to me that we have not been able to get our act together on much yet when it comes to initial testing and what happens initially, getting all the supplies to everybody. I mean, what makes us think we're going to have our act together for this?
Well, we can. But, you know, in addition to the vaccine, the point that everybody's making here, the other thing that we'd really like to see is a cure, if not a cure, a treatment that works.
Right.
And it's so fascinating. You've all heard, I hope you all heard, Lucas Willard's piece with his friend who started in Queens, couldn't get treated, went down to North Carolina.
Virginia.
Yeah. And was treated with all kinds of drugs and recovered almost miraculously, which goes to show that some people are getting treated better than others. And that is an extraordinary story.
Unfortunately, that's not exactly true, though, Alan. It doesn't mean he was treated better than others. It means he recovered more quickly than others, and it may have been the drugs he got, and it may be that he just recovered quickly because of his own metabolism and his own immune system. That's the trouble with that. It's not proven.
And he was a younger guy. Yeah.
By the way, you may be right. You may be right. I would concede that. However, if you listen to it and you look up at WAMC.org, Lucas Willard story, it is a miraculous story, and I hope everybody will do that.
Yeah, we were going to play it today, but I think the governor is going to take over our plans. But it is available online. Okay, we have some letters. Here we go. Don't shed a single tear for the oil industry, says Michael. It was their responsibility to save a portion of their profits for a rainy day, just as we were advised to do from day one. Keith.
When have we ever taught the oil industry that it had to do that? If you were the CEO of an oil company, would you have saved the money or used it to the benefit of the country, because they've never had to tap into their own resources? They always get bailed out by the government. I'm sorry, that's just good business.
We go to John, who says, I live in Woodstock, New York, and I've noticed that the bicycle shop is doing business as usual. This is an essential business, ? And what about the liquor stores? Violence, abuse, and road rage, among other things, are on the rise. Alcohol contributes to the situation. Is there a list of what businesses are essential? Well, in New York, liquor stores are essential. I don't know about the bike shops, but I do know that liquor stores are essential. But yes, there is a list on the governor's page. If you go to the governor's page and
I believe it's Empire State Development.
There you go, Empire State Development. There is a complete list.
If liquor stores were not essential services, I might pull out a Confederate flag and go marching.
And as you know, in Massachusetts, the pot shops have been closed down.
Very bad decision.
Yeah. but elsewhere they weren't. I think in California they're still open. But I was going to say, if you can get your car serviced and keep it on the road, as you might need to if you have a job or you need it in an emergency or need to buy food, transportation is legitimate, and many people only have bikes and servicing that. I mean, where do you draw the line on that one? That's a tough one.
A very good point, Mike. Thank you very much. That makes sense. Keith says, this is on oil prices and the red states is the subject line. The states that gave Trump his electoral college victory have their economies tied to oil. Excuse me, have their economies tied to health of the oil industry, like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. At sub $40 a barrel, they are losing money on everything they produce. And at negative oil prices, they're bleeding money and laying off people in record numbers. Remember that Trump won by 77,000 votes in three states, so he has the slimmest of margins. And now he has over 21 million recently unemployed Americans. Anyone on that?
I certainly agree, and I certainly agree, and I think it's why he's going to lose, and he's going to lose big. Remember, I said so.
But an interesting fact that I read over the weekend was there's a journalist, Thomas Piao, I think is how it's pronounced, who writes a lot about the coronavirus, and he analyzed Medicare and census data on age and obesity and states that have resisted the shutdowns and particular counties that had voted Republican in 2016. And for what it's worth, he calculated that those voters could be 30% more likely to die of the coronavirus. I mean, it's a grim kind of prediction. But some of the people that are supporting, you know, going out the most are the most vulnerable to getting the disease and having it turn tragic. It's really a sad kind of a bizarre turn of events.
Rosemary?
Like I say, I have to really fight the unkind thoughts that I have towards people who vote against and work against their own self-interest. And I think that applies here. They know not what they're doing.
JP?
I agree with Rosemary and Mike.
Okay. Well, great. By the way, panel, I'm stretching, so your kumbaya moments aren't exactly helping, but thank you.
It's clear that Alan was correct in invoking the mantra from the 2016 campaign that we all talked about at the beginning of the show, and that is, I like the uneducated people. The less people know, the less they know about science, the less they trust it, and the more they're looking for someone to tell them what they want to hear. Like, go out, have a good time, and don't worry about it. You won't get sick, you know.
Jim writes to us and says, dear panel, I'm dreaming of herd immunity, not only against COVID, but also herd immunity against Republican hypocrisy, disaster-prone economics, fear-mongering propaganda politics, foreign wars, and weak populist leaders. I call it GOP-19. All right. Thank you, Jim. We go to Veronica, this on essential businesses. Please remember that there is an exception for businesses that have just one employee, and that may be the case for the bicycle shops and other small businesses that provide services.
On a completely different note, do we believe that the leader of North Korea is gravely ill or not?
That is a big story, obviously. Great concern about what information is coming out of North Korea and whether it is true or not. Rosemary, what was the last date he was seen in public? Was it April 7th, I believe, something like that?
Early April, exactly.
And has not been seen since. The word is that he
not a healthy man to begin with.
No, but heart surgery, correct? We believe that he had heart surgery.
Yes.
The information is
only 30 or something. I mean, it's like 30 years old, isn't he?
He's in his 30s. Yes.
He's a heavy smoker, eats terribly.
Oh, okay.
So what we have is that South Korean and Chinese officials casting doubt on reports that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was ill after media outlets said he had undergone a cardiovascular procedure and was in grave danger, while U.S. officials are closely monitoring the situation. This from Reuters. Asked about how
we can closely monitor that with no problem, but we didn't know anything about the coronavirus in China, the president says. <yeah. laughs>
It makes me wonder, if true, how that affects things for the United States.
What do you think it would affect immediately?
Trump's reelection chances. He had a lot riding on that leader. I don't think overall it'll change much, because I can't see a very different kind of leader taking his place. If that should become necessary,
it all depends on the Chinese, because unlike other people, I truly believe the Chinese have been, monitoring this and running a good deal of it from the very beginning. We know that Kim has gone on the train to China a couple of times, presumably, I think, to get it straight what he's supposed to do, and if he does drop dead, which he might. anybody might. Then the question is who takes over, and there's a lot of talk now about his sister being the sort of strong person in the family who could do it. But that there's almost universal acknowledgement that the Chinese are going to be helping make that pick.
Bloomberg News is quoting an unnamed U.S. official as saying the White House was told that Kim took a turn for the worse after the surgery. Meanwhile, the state KCNA news agency gave no indication of the whereabouts of Kim in routine dispatches on Tuesday, but said he had, quote, sent birthday gifts to prominent citizens. An official at the Chinese Communist Party's International Liaison Department, there's another job for you, Rosemary, which deals with North Korea, told Reuters that the source did not believe Kim was critically ill. China is North Korea's only major ally, which Alan was pointing out just moments ago. And the Chinese foreign ministry spokesman was aware of reports about the health of Kim, but said it does not know their source without commenting on whether it has any information about the situation. So, again, not getting much information there. And
well, that last quote sounds almost confirmatory, to be honest with you. If they said it's not true, that's one thing. If they say we don't really have enough information about this, that's
well, you also wonder how much planning has been done for a 30-year-old dictator for transfer of power in the case of his death. You wonder, you know, is that planning in place? Have they already chosen the sister? And is there anybody else who it could be?
You mean they don't have a succession plan?
He is 36 years old. He was born on January 8th, 1984. And I was looking and has been in office. Is it since 2016? Is that right? Does that seem right to everybody?
Yeah, it seems maybe a little longer. But
yeah, I thought it was longer, too.
It was during Obama's administration that he came in, and I don't know if it was right at the end, but we knew how volatile things were. In fact, that was like the first thing that President Obama said to the newly elected President Trump the day after the election was, the things I don't sleep about most are North Korea, you know, and it was volatile then, and it's, I guess, going to be more volatile now.
Yeah, 2011. Yeah. All right. We're still waiting for Governor Cuomo, who we're expecting to speak at any moment. Again, he'll be from Buffalo, and then we'll be having a meeting with the President of the United States at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and that is going to be happening in Washington, D.C. And of course, there'll be much news coming out of that. We all already have noted that we would like to be flies on the wall of that conversation, but we'll, I assume, learn something.
And you got to believe, Joe, that the reporters are getting ready with their questions in Buffalo, which is, how did this happen? Who invited whom? When will we know more? What are you going to talk to them about? I'm sure those are going to be the questions.
I want to bring up one more story here while we have a moment, and that is that Israel's rival political leaders broke the country's unprecedented political impasse Monday when Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and challenger Benny Gantz announced a deal to join forces and form an emergency unity government. Under the terms of the agreement, Netanyahu would remain prime minister for the next 18 months, with Gantz then succeeding him. Rosemary, you gasped first. What do you make of this?
Oh, my God. This is like Trump and Obama being in a government together. These are two men who hate each other. And I am, like many of his supporters, really disappointed in Gantz, who had a real chance to change things in Israel. And he folded. And it was a betrayal to his party, which does not stand for anything Netanyahu does. And it's just hard to believe how this is better for Israel. Netanyahu is corrupt. I think he's going to use his time in office to try to escape, or at least to delay prosecution on the corruption charges he faces. And Gantz believes that by working together with him, they'll give a better response to the virus. You know, neither of them are doctors. I think he gave up a lot for very little.
Alan, what do you make of it?
Don't you?
Well, okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mike. You better.
I was just going to ask Rosemary or Alan or anybody. I mean, don't you think that that putting the country ahead of your own personal ambitions at a time like this will come back to reward him. And if Netanyahu sticks by the pact and steps out of office, Gantz will have an opportunity. And in many ways, 18 months or whatever it is forever, but it also goes by pretty quick, it seems, these days.
You know what? We don't know what Gantz knows. That's the important part to remember here. We don't know because he, in the last election, it's still razor tight, but he lost a little bit. They may have projections that show he'll lose even more. So it may be that he took what he could get. This is a terrible time in Israel. We've been talking to a lot of people there, who are in real trouble as a result of this.
Yeah. I feel like this is like in the United States, where we've suspended all our concern about the environment. We're going back to plastic bags, and we're not recycling and all that stuff. And it's in the name of the virus. And I think Israel is doing the same thing. This will do nothing to stop it. Just incredible corruption on a scale equal to what
Rosemary.
Washington.
We are, we're just been, well, the governor is walking out, so we're going to go to that right now. We thank you all. We'll go over to the governor in Buffalo, New York.